Дмитрий Анатольевич, нам вас жалко. За олигархов вступилась Пугачева алка. А ваших сторонников след простыл. Вот российский народ про вас и забыл. Все обсуждают премьер-министра. Уйдет он медленно.
As a tumultuous election season lurches towards its climax this weekend, the Russian internet is literally alight with highly politicized content from an energized opposition. Some of it is tongue-in-cheek, like the celebrity rap song we just heard, a satirical ode lamenting the departure of outgoing President Dmitry Medvedev that went viral on YouTube this week. And some of it, like a video by socialite-turned-social commentator Ksenia Sobchak, is heartfelt.
I want to defend my rights, which are enshrined in the Russian constitution that my father, Anatoly Sobchak, helped write. I want honest elections. I want my vote to be counted. I want to live under a free political system. I want my opinion and the opinion of my generation to be taken into account. I don't want a revolution. I don't want a civil war. I don't want to violently change the regime. But I want to live in a free country and I want to be heard.
But not everybody's impressed. Here's the renowned film director Stanislav Govorukhin, head of Vladimir Putin's election campaign, being interviewed by the NTV television network.
The internet is full of lies. For me, it is garbage, because it's all lies. For example, on the internet or on Twitter, they say I made some statements. I didn't make any statements. I don't even know what Twitter is.
Stanislav Sergeyevich, the internet is a platform for discussion and it's an effective way to communicate. But even Vladimir Putin's reluctant to use the internet. Is he making a mistake?
It would be a useful thing if it all wasn't controlled by the US State Department. Haven't you heard that American diplomats say that Russia's greatest hope are the bloggers?
So it's the Siloviki versus cyberspace, managed democracy versus social networking, state television versus Twitter, the power vertical versus the power horizontal. Hello and welcome to a special pre-election edition of the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Hello.
As Russians go to the polls on Sunday to elect a new president, careful observers can't help but feel that they're seeing two distinct nations. On one side, there is a growing urban and urbane middle class that is highly educated, wired, globalized, and increasingly self-confident. And on the other is a larger mass that is struggling, parochial, fearful of change, and largely dependent upon the state for both its information and its income. The former wants political reform, while the latter tends to support Vladimir Putin. But what's happening in Russia today is about much more than politics. One side is younger and wealthier than the other, but this is also more than a generation gap or a class conflict. The rift between these two Russias is largely cultural and aesthetic. And its implications will last far beyond Sunday's election, which Putin is expected to win easily. Kirill, what is it that divides these two Russias?
It seems so. Sure, you are absolutely right. At the first sight, we see a very divided society between two parts. One part, as some expert, political expert, and some cyber expert usually say that one part of the society is watching TV and other is watching their computer screens. And this is the line of this division. For sure, those who now oppose the regime or the maybe some aspects of the regime, not the regime itself, maybe, and we'll return to this topic. There, as you told, the wealthier and they live in Moscow and St. Petersburg and big cities and they're modern. In other words, they live in the 21st century. And those who supporting now Vladimir Putin, it seems to be that they live in 20th century. And this is the division. Let's turn our attention to quite a remote field of aesthetics. As Lenin told once, that politics is a kind of concentrated economics. Now aesthetics, now in post-war Western society, and Russia is a part of Western society for sure, aesthetics is a concentrated economics and concentrated social relations. Maybe it was not so in a traditional society, maybe in medieval society, where the aesthetics was or had been the part of the traditional ritual society with the traditional society with all its rituals, including political rituals, social rituals, and religious. Now, after the Second World War, in the modern and postmodern world, aesthetics is what is ruling the world via pop culture and now via through internet. And that is the field of, I think, the recent or forthcoming battle between two parts of Russian population, between those, as you told, who are very depend on economically and socially, depend on the state, and all this paraphernalia of the state economy and state politics and so on. It's not just about that there are people who work at the state factories or the state industry or who are the policemen and whatever. No, those who are connected to state in some incredible ways, maybe, in the ways of corruption, by the way. And the other one, at the first side, those who are independent, economically independent from the from the state, or half independent, semi independent from the state, and who grew as a result of this post-industrial revolution in the 2000s in Russia. This aesthetics appears in some very interesting forms now. For instance, this kind of battle or war of words between Ksenia Sobchak and Stanislav Govoruchin. Who is Stanislav Govoruchin? He's a former Soviet liberal.
Yes, he is. That's
he shot famous soap opera "Место встречи изменить нельзя" with such stars as Vladimir Vysotsky and a lot of other people. And it was not just a dissident. It was not a dissident movie for sure, or a soap opera.
But he's a Soviet liberal. Yes,
Soviet liberal. He is a former Soviet liberal. Who is Ksenia Sobchak? Ksenia Sobchak. She is a daughter of one of the first post-Soviet liberals. It's just the next generation. But you can imagine, and we are moving into
the... Are you
the...
saying that Ksenia Sobchak and Govoruchin flow from the same tradition of
yes,
Soviet liberalism?
Absolutely.
That's very interesting.
So-called шестидесятничество.
Exactly.
And in this way, I think, it's pity, but modern Russian opposition is absolutely the same archaic as pro-Putin supporters, because their circle of the ideas is absolutely the same as it was in 1960s in Soviet Union.
You mean the debates that were going on in the Soviet Union
yes,
in the 70s
yes,
and the 80s about the need
yes,
to reform the system or
yes,
not? Yeah, I see
that's
a lot of parallels
why,
there.
That's why all these lexics, возьмемся за руки, друзья, let's hold hands. All these songs from famous bard singers of the Soviet times, and even such things or such figures as Yuri Shevchuk, he is the product of late Soviet, not pop culture, but underground culture. But anyway, it's absolutely the same. And the most recent and the most modern thing in this modern, recent anti-Putin opposition is technology, Mm-hmm. And rap music.
Technology? No, and I was just about to say, there are some things that are very new right now. Yeah. Dush TV, for example, yeah. I've never seen anything like that in Russia. Mm-hmm. I've never seen anything like it in the West, to be quite honest.
It's kind of new social modern media. Yeah. Yes. And the next question, is this all, I don't know, new social media, internet, Wi-Fi, and Twitter, whatever, is just a tool or it's a content?
It's an environment, I think, and I've always thought that the younger generation understood it as such, and the problem of the regime is they looked at it as a tool. We discussed this in a previous podcast, and I thought it was a very interesting discussion that I think people like Ksenia Sobchak understand the internet as an environment, as an ecosystem, as a milieu, where the regime seems to try to use it as a tool, and they're somewhat clumsy in the way they do so, I might add.
For sure. And they cannot attract younger people by this, silly words by Govoruchin that he doesn't know what Twitter is. Yes, but it's his own problem, his private problem. It's not a political problem. And
Putin
so on.
Famously said most of the internet's pornography.
Yes. And... but if we go on with this topic, let's turn upside down this phrase about that aesthetics is a concentrated economics and politics. Yeah, but at the same time, aesthetics could be a reason, could be a kind of field where a new politics would grow.
Do you see this happening?
I'm not sure that it's happening just now, but it could. Happened.
Let's go. Can you go into some? You talked a bit earlier, and it piqued my interest about rituals and aesthetics. Can you talk a little bit about the rituals of these two camps, if you will? The rituals and the aesthetics.
The division is obvious. If you see at the people who are attending all these pro-Putin rallies and so on, they are from post-Soviet Russian soap opera, TV soap operas. Yes, they dress like them. Uh-huh. They think like them. Yes, it's a meat-eating, vodka-drinking people who depend on their salaries, who depend on in their opinions on the TV propaganda, or not propaganda, but soap operas, and so who still reading the paper newspapers and so on. And the other side, they are usually so-called hipsters, not of course all of them, the opposition are hipsters, for sure. Yes, but in Russian meaning, the word hipster, it's not like some person in London or New York with in skinny jeans and so on. It's a modern young people who are internet savvy.
They look to me indistinguishable from Europeans in that sense.
Yes, absolutely, sense. Because they travel a lot outside Russia. They usually know foreign languages and so on. But don't forget, all this new generation, but I think there are two various generations. The generation of Ksenia Sobchak, it's a little bit older.
Yeah, and she's 30. Yeah.
Yes, the newest one, the youngest one, those who are 18, 22, both of these generations, they are the product of Putin's 12 years.
They are
Russia.
Putin's children. These are Putin's children.
Yes. So in some sense, it's a kind of uprising of sons against...
it's Turgenev. It's fathers and children.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that is the most, for me privately, it's the most boring thing in all these Russian events.
The same
old story. This шестидесятничество, Soviet liberalism in full swing, and the second, this kind of ritual of the uprising of the sons against the fathers.
Well, it may be boring, but it's something we've seen in many societies and in different contexts. I mean, think of the post-war generation in the West, in the United States and in Western Europe. The first generation that grew up in relative prosperity, relative security, relative safety. And what did they do? Came the 60s, they came of age, and they rebelled against their parents. They did it in America. They did it in France. They did it in West Germany. And so what we're seeing is something that is very, very predictable. It's predicted by social psychology, which says as you become comfortable in your material condition, you begin to yearn for higher things. In this case, whatever, democracy, human rights, and in the West, it was for civil liberties and women's rights and so on. This is a natural occurrence that Russia is going through right now. So it may be boring, but it's also, at the same time, I think, pretty exciting and not that surprising.
Well, it was my, first of all, it was my private opinion. And secondly, from the philosophic point of view, I am waiting for the appearing of a kind of new political meaning. Yes, mm-hmm. We cannot in Russia we cannot discuss all the time the same things. Yes,
well, you have to until you come over some barrier. Right now, if you listen to Ksenia Sobchak at the beginning, when that very heartfelt monologue where she was saying she wants to live under the constitution that her father helped author, and it was almost. Quaint, because I heard the same things. Of course, the Constitution wasn't written yet, but I heard the same things in the Perestroika period, where people saying, "Let's live by our own laws. Let's obey our own laws."
It's the most famous slogan of Soviet dissidents.
Yes,
just follow your own Constitution.
But we're going to continue hearing this until the authorities do abide by their own constitution. And the opposition really has no choice but to make this demand until that demand is finally met. Right?
Yes, but absolutely, I agree with you. But there is one very serious problem. The problem is that all these beautiful young people in Moscow who are opposing the regime, they think just about themselves and about their being as
cool as possible.
Yes, but what about all the country? What about the population of regions? What about the most important things in Russia just now? It's medicine, it's education, it's unemployment, and so on. I attending a rally on the 4th of... It was on 4th, yes, on 4th of February mm-hmm. in Moscow. And I was just in the middle of the crowd, yes, mm-hmm. During this demonstration on Bolshaya Yakimanka to Bolotnaya mm-hmm. Square. I didn't see any slogan about medicine, education, about salaries, about whatever. All the slogans were just against Putin. It's kind of collective hysteria.
Well, in a sense, that's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is we're not going to be able to solve the problems of medicine or healthcare, education, and so on until we have a responsive political system, until the authorities are accountable to the society. Because you're not going to solve society's problems if you're not accountable to society. If you have a paternalistic system, the elite is going to do what it wants and not be responsive. So I think in one sense, we're not going to get to that place until we get over some very, very basic things. And that's what the opposition seems to be trying to say right now, is that we can't get there. We can't fix our education system until we stop corruption. We can't fix our healthcare or our pension system until you people stop stealing. And you're not going to stop stealing until you have honest elections and you actually have a rotation of the authorities where you're not in power for your entire life. So I think maybe it's one step at a time here. I agree with you. We're not seeing much about the issues, so to speak. And this is one thing that always stands out for me with Russian elections is if you look at an election in the United States or Great Britain or Germany, it's all about the issues. It's all about the health care and what to do about the economy and how to fix the educational system. And in Russia, it's, are we going to have an honest election? And that's a pretty basic thing. But if you don't get over that very basic thing, then you're not going to solve the other issues.
First of all, they totally forgot about the public initiatives in medicine, education, and so on in the regions.
Yes.
They totally forgot. But all these initiatives, they existed and still exist. And they I think they had to and still have to support these initiatives from Moscow, from all these opposition groups and so on, and try to join them, all these initiative groups into the ranks of the very wide public movement. But they are thinking just about their irritation against one figure.
Because that is the dominant theme right now.
Yes. And that's why I told you that it's very boring, because it's the same Russian story.
It's the same Russian story that we've seen.
Tsar is bad.
And as we move on, I'd like to see if it's possible to move beyond that. I'd like to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is Kirill Kobrin, the managing editor of RFERL's Russian service.
Яростно плюсую. Свобода – это необходимо. Свобода – это нужно. Свобода – это наше единственное оружие. Его не существует в реальности, но его нужно было бы придумать для того, чтобы хоть как-то оправдать тот безысходный юмор, который рождается в наших головах, когда некуда идти далее. Спасибо всем, кто это слышит, даже если они в Италии, даже если они далее, если они где-нибудь там на Антарктиде. Слышите меня или нет? Эй, видео. Нормально получилось? Нормальный взят ракурс? Итак, отлично.
That was Noise MC, a member of this digital globalized generation, rapping freestyle recently in the Moscow studios of Radio Liberty. Kirill, assuming Vladimir Putin wins on Sunday, and I think that's a pretty safe assumption, how will he be able to bridge this gap? Does he want to bridge this gap? Is he even thinking about this gap? Can he govern this divided country?
To be honest, I don't know. Really don't know.
Because you're not the only one.
Yes. Because it's a very wide gap between two parts of the population. And, of course, the population of Russian regions and those who support Putin, they are the majority.
Yes,
and so-called creative class, CC, or in Russian KK, it's a minority, but it's a very powerful minority.
It's
because
a very wealthy minority, it's a very powerful minority that has a loud voice.
They produced real goods in postmodern society. They produced information, they produced technology, and so on. And that is, now it's a choice which stands before Vladimir Putin, what to do in the future 4 years, if he will won, of course.
He seems to have made his choice in the election in terms of cobbling together an electoral majority. He seems to have gone with the masses, with, for lack of a better term, the working class, the budgetniki, the people that are more dependent on the state. He's gone there, and that's not surprising. That's the majority, right? Afterwards, where does he go?
It could be just a game of his political technologists and so on. I'm not sure, because they can. I think that he could make some very liberal gestures after his elections. I cannot exclude the possibility that he will, free Khodorkovsky.
Yeah,
or
that's possible.
He will appoint Mikhail Prokhorov as a prime minister.
Or Alexei Kudrin.
Or Alexei Kudrin, his friend, close friend.
Very close friend.
And so on. I think he's not yet made a decision about the future. Because do you remember, we told some months ago about the pragmatism. The sheer pragmatism of this Putin regime. The regime itself doesn't have an ideology. The only ideology of the regime is pragmatism.
Keeping themselves in power.
Yes, yes. Now they want to keep in power. They want to win the elections without any riots or demonstrations or rallies and so on. And after that, they will think about future, but just nearest future. Mm-hmm. Just nearest future. Now their task is to legitimize the elections and to legitimize the results of the election. That's why they try to play kind of fair play in these elections, in their terms.
Or at least
course.
The appearance thereof.
Yes, in their terms. In their terms, of course. But it's absolutely We can't even compare the previous elections, Duma elections, right. with the campaign, right. with this campaign. This campaign is absolutely different than this Duma campaign. And I am sure that they try to play this in their terms, of course. They have fair play on the 4th of March.
Do you expect less falsification on the 4th of March?
They ought to do this.
They ought.
They ought to.
Another thing I see, Kirill, when I look at these two groups, the smaller creative class and the larger masses, the words that keep coming to mind to describe their attitudes are hope and fear. Right? The rising middle class, your Ksenia Sobchaks, your noise MCs, and so on, and not just these famous people, but the tens of thousands of others, they are confident about the future. They're confident in themselves. They're confident about the future. The others appear fearful that if you rock the boat, if you reform the political system, if you move beyond Putinism, you're going to have chaos. You're going to have deprivation, just like you had after the breakup of the USSR. Would you say this is an accurate characterization? And is it possible that one side could get over its fear?
In some sense, it's a true picture. But don't forget, let's return to aesthetics. Mm-hmm. Don't forget about such thing as aesthetic irritation.
Mm-hmm.
Those who are now this creative class is those who are against Putin. They are aesthetically irritated by the figure of Putin and his inner circle and the presentation and the representation of this of this sort of consciousness, public consciousness, on TV screens.
You mean the macho imagery of him
yes.
going fishing with his shirt off and
yes.
things like this,
yes.
the tough guy
yes.
rhetoric, the scatological
yes.
references.
Yes,
the,
yes,
right.
yes. All this sexist, machist rubbish in in direct words. Yeah?
Right.
Yes. Of course, they try to be modern, desperately try to be modern, these young people and so on. And they used to be modern in Western meaning of this mm-hmm. Term. So that's why they're aesthetically irritated by the figure of Putin itself.
No, I would add to that, though, the other side, if you listen to Stanislav Gavarukin's statement that we made at the beginning, the other side is aesthetically irritated by these hipsters as well.
For sure. Don't forget that Stanislav Gavarukin showed this movie with Vladimir Vysotsky.
Right.
Vladimir Vysotsky, he is an icon of Soviet and Russian machismo.
Right.
That is the line of the division between. Mm-hmm. That's why I told you that those who are supporting now Vladimir Putin, they live in the 20th century.
Mm-hmm.
And those who are opposing him, they try to live in 21st century.
Mm-hmm. I think they're living in there. I mean, to the best that they can, as you can in Russia, I think they are living in the 21st century.
In some sense.
Russia isn't the only country in the world to have such a cultural divide. The United States has lived with a cultural divide for a very, very, very long time. I would say since the 1960s, but some historians would probably say it goes back farther than that. We've long had the division between the so-called conservative and traditional so-called red states, right, that vote Republican in elections, and the more liberal and cosmopolitan blue states on the coasts that vote for the Democrats. In this sense, are we seeing a maturing of the Russian political system where we do have this cultural divide? Or is this just, as you suggested earlier, just the latest manifestation of the debates that went on throughout the late Soviet period?
There are two points. On one point, I can agree with you. For sure, it's a maturing of the not political system, but kind of political consciousness of a Russian society. For sure. They organize a lot of peaceful rallies and demonstrations and so on. They just invented from the zero Russian political internet, Russian political web.
Yeah,
it's a sign of maturing,
mm-hmm.
I am sure, and I think the things are moving in the right direction in this sense. But other point, it's a point of disagreement with you. This division between Moscow or in imperial times St. Petersburg and Russian province, it's a traditional one.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about fate of Russia after the reforms of Peter the Great. Peter the Great, this is a man who divided Russia into two parts. Западники, Westerners, or Westerners, mm-hmm. yes, and not Slavinophili, mm-hmm. but traditional thinking, yes, the people, those who think traditionally in aesthetic, political, social, whatever, cultural terms. And now we see the same game.
Mm-hmm.
We're returning to the boring subject on the same games in Russian politics, but this game is playing on the absolutely other technological field.
Exactly, and that's going to have that has implications for how this game is going to be played.
Yes, and the question is if the field itself could be a player in this game.
And how would that be? How would the field be a player in the game?
New technology, the internet, and so on. And sometimes a new technology can give a birth to a new sort of political thinking of the consciousness of the public opinion. That is, I think, a very important thing. Don't forget about the Industrial Revolution in Western world mm-hmm. in the 18th century. The 19th century and all this modern times, modernity, mm-hmm. is the result of the Industrial Revolution. Who knows?
Some of the things I say, I agree with you to a large extent, but in some sense, this isn't just a battle between Moscow and Petersburg and the provinces. Because we're starting to see similar on a micro level, and we just sent one of our correspondents to Yekaterinburg to investigate this, and he filed an excellent report on this, that you're starting to see on a micro level in places like Yekaterinburg, Nizhny Novgorod, other places, that this urbane middle class is developing in these cities too. And that it feels much more connected to the Moscow urbane classes than it does to the rest of its own city or its own region. So you're also, what you're seeing in some ways right now, and this is a theme I want to play with on the blog a little bit, is that Russia might be seeing its first horizontally integrated
yes.
generation.
I agree.
Now, Russian generations in the past have been integrated vertically through the Komsomol or more recently through Nashi.
Orthodox
Church, whatever. But right now we're seeing people across the vast territory of Russia integrated with each other via Twitter, Facebook, Kontakte, what have you, LiveJournal, YouTube, name your platform. And they're experiencing things together. And most importantly, they're experiencing things together independent of the state. This is a power horizontal that I call it, that is almost rivaling Putin's power vertical. And what are the implications of that?
That's what I meant saying that the field, a new technological field, could be a player, mm-hmm. a very powerful player in this game. Horizontal.
The power horizontal.
Power horizontal can oppose power vertical for sure, because let's return to the philosophy. This sort of consciousness, horizontal consciousness, is much more modern than vertical in the modern world because of new technologies,
mm-hmm.
because of internet, because all the internet is absolutely horizontal. It's about the horizontal connections, not about the vertical exactly. connections and so on. And that is the point where this aesthetic disagreement is focused. For instance, between Ksenia Sobchak and Stanislav Govoruchin, because Govoruchin is thinking vertically.
Yes.
He is speaking about an internet, about Twitter and so on, as about some kind of people
right. yes.
who can speak about something, who can lie or who can say true or whatever. But they are not people. It's just a place. It's just a horizontal place.
It's an environment.
And, yes, it's an environment. And that is the thing which Stanislav Govoruchin just cannot understand.
It's like to him a country where he doesn't understand the language and he doesn't feel comfortable.
Yes.
Where your Ksenia Sobchaks and your Noise MCs are very, very, very comfortable in this country and they do speak the language.
For sure. And that is, I think, we can symbolically describe the situation as now in Russia as a kind of struggle between the power vertical and new technology horizontal.
Power horizontal, and maybe I'll have to change the name of my blog and change the name of this podcast if this continues. Unfortunately, this has been a fascinating discussion, but this is all we have time for today. I'd like to remind our listeners that you can read the Power Vertical blog at rferl.org. You can also join our Facebook page or follow us on Twitter. This has been the Power Vertical Podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog. My guest in the studio today has been Kirill Kobrin, the managing editor of RFRL's Russian service. Thanks for your time today, Kirill.
Thank you very much.
And that's all we have time for today. And I'd like to leave you now with the music of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.